Listening to that was the Justice Minister, Andrew Little, who's with me in our Wellington studio this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Kyle.
Can we just talk about this 14 grams issue? Why mm-hmm. did you come to that amount?
That was on the basis of advice received. It was estimated to be the kind of quantity that a regular average user might use in a week. Of course, having 14 grams doesn't mean to say you're going to consume 14 grams either in a day or a week or over any other period of time. So that was the
Does it seem like quite a lot to you now? I mean, there's obviously been a lot of debate in the last 24 hours. You said at the time you weren't that sure about it, but it's, you know, half an ounce by sort of most people's measures. That's quite a lot.
Yes, I understand. People have said that. They've said anything from 21 to 42 joints. I've seen a lesser number. Look, I don't have any personal experience of that, so I'm not going to be drawn on it. I go on advice on this. Remember, this is about the regulatory framework that we put in place is about accepting that there will be levels of personal use that will be tolerated, and that includes a very small amount of sharing with others as well. So if that's what that amount allows to happen in a very strictly controlled regime, then that's what it is. I take that advice.
How does it work? So if somebody goes in to buy their 14 grams on one day to one store, what's to stop them going to another store and getting another 14 grams?
Probably common sense. I mean, look, we can conceive of various scenarios where people might shop around and stock up. If they're found in possession of more than that, then they're going to be breaking the law. I guess we just have to assume that most, even regular users of cannabis, are not. We might not think their habit is a good one, but they're not necessarily stupid people. So I don't think people are going to do stupid things. I think you don't write a law.
We hope not, but I mean the worry. We hope things. Not, but we know people do.
Yeah.
And the worry that people
and
have is
people
that they will then
trouble.
Supply minors. That they will then supply. That you will see it become more available to young people because there will be some people who are over 20 who are supplying.
Yeah, and so there's a penalty regime for that. Supplying people under the age of 20 is a very serious offence under the draft bill. What we're trying to get to and give the choice for voters to decide on if we're going to go down that path is the objective must be to push out the age of first use because we know that the biggest risk is for younger users. It is not good for the young adolescent brain, so we want to push that out. Anybody who then goes around buying up huge quantities and if they're not caught thinks they can pass it off to younger people, they're going to get into big trouble.
Do you seriously believe that having this regime will make cannabis less available to young people?
Yes, it is available to young people now at a time when it is absolutely prohibited. We have an absolute prohibition on cannabis, and yet it is available to young people.
Yeah, but they still have to go through it. But there's a lot more risk. There's a lot more. There's a lot more barriers potentially.
Well, I'm not so sure because it is somewhat prolific in some places. So one of the arguments for legalisation is that you get to put in place a regime that controls the cultivation of it, the distribution of it, the retail of it, the consumption of it. That's why you do it. Now, New Zealanders or New Zealand voters will have a chance to decide once they see all the material. We have a good public debate about it throughout next year to decide whether we want to go down that path. And they will choose between what we've got now, which is the presence of cannabis widespread in our communities at a time of absolute prohibition, or an alternative, which is legalisation and control and regulation of a substance which is capable of causing harm. That's the choice New Zealand voters will have.
Okay, so edibles. This is we're hearing that the lolly versions, the gummy bears that have been used by some opponents, or which are, as a criticism, they won't be available because what? They are
defined as that they are a controlled activity under the bill, which means that they are then subject to regulation. Now, one of the regulations themselves are subject to a set of principles, which is about not appealing to young people.
But if it's a lump of jelly that doesn't look like a gummy bear, it might still get through.
But then it's not a gummy bear, is it? I mean,
it's the same edible product.
Okay, so the idea is we regulate any product that has cannabis in it. And we have to strictly regulate that in place of consumption, place of purchase, all those sorts of things.
So the concern would be around the marketing and the marketing of that product. So obviously, as you pointed out, gummy bears is clearly something that might appeal to younger people. So it's about the marketing of it is the concern, not the fact that it's edible. You're going to allow edible products.
The bill as it's drafted at the moment allows for edibles, but it is controlled and regulated. So any edible product has to itself be approved, and approval won't be given if it is aimed, clearly pitched at, you know, younger people, marketed to particular audiences that we don't want consuming cannabis.
Just finally on the cannabis before we move to donations, no advertising at all for these products.
That's correct.
Is that a bit tough given the level of advertising that is allowed for alcohol?
Well, I think the idea is that we learn from the mistakes of big alcohol and big tobacco. We don't repeat those mistakes. So, other jurisdictions that have this sort of regime don't have advertising. The shops at which you purchase the product are quite discreet. You'd barely know that they were there.
If we look at your other big issue that's running at the moment, donations, you expect that law to be passed by this morning?
Yes.
Why did you need to do this so quickly, a piece of significant legislation? Well, you had bipartisan support. What was the point in rushing this through?
We've been waiting for some time for the Justice Committee to report back on their election inquiry, the 2017 election inquiry. They've had quite a bit of evidence and quite a few submissions on this topic. It is an important issue. It's a serious issue. Democracies around the world are facing the issue of foreign interference and foreign influence. It's very easy to do. One channel for that is through donations. We took the view that we have to act before the 2020 general election. We can't leave it too much later. We've got to the point where the Justice Committee simply is unable at the moment to produce a report, and we want to get this law passed so that we go into 2020, a year of an election, without this risk.
But I'm inclined to say, so what if the Select Committee takes a while? That's Parliament. That's the process.
But the inquiry into the general election, which is, and it's that inquiry and its report, we are expecting a lot of information and insights and recommendations, has been going for over 18 months now. And it just seems to have got blocked. Now, I don't know what is blocking it. I don't know why anybody would want to block it, but we can't. There is no report about it, but the evidence has been publicly given to the committee about the risk of foreign interference and foreign influence.
Can you explain to me, what is the problem here? How many foreigners are donating just under $1,500 or something? I mean, it doesn't seem like a very big amount.
$1,500, no. But we also know in the classic case, and Jamie LaRosse talked about it at length in Parliament last night, the $150,000 that goes through an ostensibly New Zealand-registered company, the New Zealand-Mongolian Thoroughbred Bracing Outfit, and real questions about the true origins of that money.
But this doesn't stop that.
No, it totally does.
I thought the Prime Minister said last night that it didn't.
No, it does, because of the due diligence requirement on party general secretaries. And so they then have to, and of course, the due diligence applied for an ostensibly foreign donation ends up having to apply to every donation. So party general secretaries have to be sure that every donation complies with the law.
So rather than you, as the government, just saying, right, we're not going to allow, why don't you just say we're not going to allow foreign donations from foreign companies, and even if they're set up in New Zealand? Rather than make some poor secretary of a party now have to pore over every single donation to make sure that it isn't coming from a foreign company.
Well, donations and party secretaries and candidates for donations over $50.
Why leave it to a party secretary to have to make this decision? That's your job.
Because they carry a number of statutory responsibilities already in terms of returns and responsibility for the conduct of the party under the Electoral Act. So they already have a set of responsibilities. They're the ones who know the money that's coming in. They're the ones best placed to provide that level of due diligence.
And so what would they do if they are concerned about a donation that's above $1,500 or whatever has come from a foreign source? What would they do?
Make appropriate inquiries about the origin of it. Now, I think it's pretty clear, and I expect the Electoral Commission will give guidance on it. The level of due diligence required will be proportionate to the size of the donation. If it is a $75 donation and questions might arise about its origins, a level of due diligence is required, but less than if it were a $150,000 donation coming from a company called New Zealand Mongolian Thoroughbred Racing.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Andrew Little, thank you very much for your time.